It's the Buzz 24/7 at morningbuzz.com.
This is unbelievable.
Now that's what's up.
That is what's up. Wow. What a special day. What a special day.
Two Jimmies.
Yeah, two Jimmies. We got two Jimmies in the studio. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Buzz 24/7. Laura had to, as we say, bounce in the biz because I'm young and hip. And
Yeah, totally.
Jimmy Dunn is with us.
Also young and hip.
Very, very young and hip as well.
Old and a bad hip, actually. if we're being honest.
Okay. All right. I do what I can, though. Also with us is our second Jim, our dear friend, Jim Roach, who, a lot of you, produces a lot of live music shows and comedy shows all over New England, and is the executive producer and our longtime friend. He's the executive producer of the Buzz Christmas Ball. Jimmy, what's going on, buddy?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Listen to that friggin' voice, too. Yeah. What a dick.
Plus, the hair's looking pretty good. I was afraid the headphones would ruin your hair.
I know. He's got some good hair there. Jim, how are you?
I'm great, man.
This is the first time you've ever been on the air with us.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's only a few people that listen to this, though.
That's good. That's good, because I'm going to mess something up here.
No, there's a lot. I'm just telling you, there's a lot. We were just talking, because, you know, we Buzzball tickets went on sale last Friday, and... We sold a couple.
Yeah, we sold a couple. I didn't know.
Yeah. It's the only show. It's December 19th, presented by Granite State Credit Union. So thank you very much. And see your kitchen and bath. But it's the only show where we announced that we're doing a show. And Jimmy's been all a part of it forever.
Forever.
Yeah. And we announced that we're doing a show. And we don't even tell you who's going to be on it. And we've already sold 700 and plus tickets today.
It's incredible.
I have not even announced that I'm going to be there.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Well, once we say that you're going to be there, I mean, I expect the tickets are really
going to be sold out immediately.
But it is, you know, every year when we do, for those of you that go to the Buzz Ball, we bring Jim out every year because really he's the one that sort of molds the show, and he's the man that makes everything happen, you know, from who is on the show, how it works, how it flows, and all that stuff. And he's the guy we always bring out on stage to thank.
I work with Roachy on a daily basis. He helps run my comedy career.
Yeah.
And I can say this, the 2 or 3 weeks running up to the Buzz Ball, he's a world-class dick.
Yeah.
Because he's just juggling artists' egos and whose dog's going to poop where, and it's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
Which is different because Jimmy's a dick year-round.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah. All right, we're going to go that way.
We were talking on the show this morning about, like, Jimmy, you know, I love Jimmy. Yeah. I love Jimmy.
Thanks,
Jimmy,
brother.
And I have a great relationship, and he's got a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
But I love that, though. I do love that.
I think that makes me funny.
But you also, if I tell you, you got a freaking chip on your shoulder, you don't get pissed. You just go... I do.
Yeah.
You know, you want to go? That's what he says.
Yeah.
You want to go?
Like Tom Brady drafted 199, man.
Yeah.
I mean, show some respect.
That's right.
I'm not saying I'm Tom Brady. Don't send me an email. Don't compare yourself to Tom Brady. I'm just saying, look, sometimes I feel mm-hmm. disrespected, and mm-hmm. it motivates me.
Yeah.
I work harder.
Dude, I will say that in our career, mm-hmm. in our tenure here on the show, us, you know, the guys on the show, I never forget. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit there and go out of my way to be negative or go after someone. But if Scotty, let's say, you know, if Scotty was a guy and whatever, he treated us badly. If he treated us badly, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to forget that.
No.
You know.
I get it. I know who's done that in my business, and I know who's helped me too, and I try and help out the people that helped me. But it is. It's my business is super competitive, and I think that's just natural.
Yeah.
I don't care what you do for a living. If somebody is a competitor and they did you wrong, you're not going to forget that.
And it doesn't mean I don't forgive people, because I do. I mean, you know, you can have problems with someone and work it out, and you're good to go. I mean, that's happened a lot. But there are sometimes, you know, there are sometimes when I'm not giving in. I'm just going to go about my way and do my thing, and that's it. We don't have to cross paths anymore. And if we do, I'm going in another direction.
Yep.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that make me a dick?
No.
But in my business, a lot of times you walk into a green room and two of those guys that you don't want to cross paths with ever again are in there.
Yeah.
And then it just makes for a grumpy night.
Yeah.
You know, and you just go, all right, I'll be out in the parking lot. Let me know when I'm on.
But you can't talk to them and stuff.
Pointing it, man. They're all egomaniacs. I am too. I know it. Listen.
At least you know it. At least you admit
it.
This is part of the fun.
There are people that I've known for decades. The guy's just a dick.
Yeah.
Right?
Some people are.
And if I'm in a green room with him, I'm not going to be nice to him. He's been a dick for 30 years. Why am I going to be the better person and I don't need to.
I'm not asking you to be the better person.
Yeah.
I'm just, if it was me, I would either not hang in the green room.
Exactly. That's what I do.
Okay. Then that's not being a dick.
Yeah, nice. But you got to go in and check in, and then I get a nice coffee. Okay. I go sit out on my truck.
I think, like, why do I have to be nice to him when he's being a dick? I don't have to be nice. I just have to be anything.
Yeah. Right.
I don't want to invest any energy in someone that has really screwed me.
Sometimes people that book shows, like Jim. Jim knows. He knows my list, man. He knows my do not fly list, right?
I check the list before I book anything.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it changes all the time.
How hard is that? Like, you have to navigate not just Jimmy, but every performer. So this is the side of the business that people don't see.
Yeah.
Right? This Jim is the guy, the go-between between the talent, whether it's, you know, whether it's a Marley, whether it's a Justin McKinney, whether it's, you know, a number of bands that have worked throughout New Hampshire and New England, and the venues. Mm-hmm. And all these other things, you're the go-between.
And the marketing and getting tickets on sale, and literally somebody calls and says, I bought tickets off a lousy website and I got hacked and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
He's still got to make it right. I mean, he handles all of that nonsense.
Yeah.
Right? And
right.
It's nonstop. And then the show finally starts and I come in and go, where's my iced coffee?
Yeah. Right. So let me ask you this. Because, you know, we don't get to talk. We don't talk to people who do what you do. You're the person, you're the engineer behind it. There's the talent that gets on stage and does the show, but the show doesn't happen without guys who do what you do. I say guys, I mean men or women. Point is, what do you get out of it? Never mind the monetary, right? Mm-hmm. But what enjoyment? I know the answer.
Yeah.
Share it with the audience what it is that you get out of it.
I truly believe I'm blessed to do what I get to do every day. And it's been an interesting journey over the years. I've got to do some really cool stuff at big stadium shows, and I've worked with great people. You know, I was at that Kinison show we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
You know, I ran that room for a little while.
Yeah.
I really love what I get to do. I don't have talents to be on stage. I have no desire to be on stage. But what I love doing is putting an artist in front of an audience, and I think that we need that. I know that during the pandemic, we lost that connection between the audience and the artist on stage. And when we're able to gather again and get back on stage, you know, people like Jimmy, but Jimmy's a little bit different, as we all know. But like, performers need to be on stage. They need to get that reinforcement for the work they've put in. And all these artists work years and years to do that. But the audience needs it too.
Yep.
It's like we as humans, that's the part that's important to me, is like that connection between the artist and the audience, because they really do need each other, and we feel better after we leave a show. And the world's an awful place these days. So
and he'll actually, he's one of the few people that I know that does this for a living, produces events, and will go to an event that he has nothing to do with.
Yeah.
As a civilian.
Right.
Like,
right.
If you call me and go, hey, you want to go? I mean, you have called me. Hey, you want to go see this comedian? No.
Yeah.
I know. I don't care how good the seats are. But
so,
he will still go and see these events.
Yeah.
Because he genuinely loves it.
Well, because, you know, what you were talking about, the flowery stuff, that hippie stuff, mm-hmm. right? Some people are going to hear that. Guys like Scotty go, that's bullshit. He doesn't really think that. No, I know that you absolutely do because you know I do.
Yeah.
I feel the same. We're kindred spirits in that way.
We are.
I remember during COVID, I went and saw Bob Marley at the Palace Theater. Valerie and I sat in the second row. There was nobody in the row in front of us or the row behind us, and the closest people were at least six seats away.
Yeah.
And
so
I remember,
how many people in the show altogether?
250?
Yeah. Yeah.
In the Palace.
In a room that holds 1,000, right.
Yeah.
And Cap Center, the same thing. We had sold out the Cap Center. We had 300 people in there. There were 1,000 empty seats.
Yeah.
But we had to do it to put on a show.
Yeah, and Marley, he wanted to keep the edge sharp because that's who he is. But getting back to the audience needing it, I sat there and I had a mask on in the theater, and Marley's being Marley up on stage. I love the man, as you do, as we all
love him.
And I sat there going, man, this is where we're at.
Yep.
But this is what it takes. And it was really, really good. Even though it was weird,
yeah,
it was good. 2 weeks later, I went and saw Adam Ezra in a parking lot, and I just basked in the fact that I was seeing music performed on stage, and not only because I love the band and him, but because, shit, I was feeling that connection, yeah, that we all need.
Yeah.
And Buzzball, at a very busy time of year, when everything's going crazy and everybody's at their wit's end and all a million things going on, is the 2.5 hour, 2 hour, 2.5 hour, sometimes three. Jim doesn't like that.
I'd like to stretch it to 4 hours. If we do 4, I feel like we've done our job.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah. But that's that one time where people can go in and let everything go and be a part of that. Yeah. And I'm 100% on board with how you feel about that kind of thing.
I think it's our Christmas family, the performers that we bring.
Yeah.
And we rotate them out every couple of years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people come in and out. But the audience is there because they're there to see you guys and be part of something live. Because they listen to you every morning, but they get to see you on stage. They get to meet you downstairs and do pictures. You guys stand for hours after the show and take pictures downstairs. But I think everybody gets to gather and like go, okay, this is what my holidays are now. We've been doing it for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, nobody else can, for a local show that we don't announce, to sell that many tickets in a couple of days is remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's based on your audience.
Yeah. It's, well, the connection is real and we don't take that for granted. But of all the people that, let me see, you said stadium show. I know you used to run, you worked the ballroom.
You worked the Hampton Beach Casino Ballroom.
That's where I met Roachie.
Did you do Cape Cod? Did you do that? Did you do the Melody Tent? No. What places have you done?
No, we just did the Melody Tent with Marley a few weeks ago. But we started the Country Club Festival at Foxborough, a guy named Mike Flanagan, and I was his assistant and became his business partner. And we did that for 6 years. So we did big shows at the old stadium.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I've done everything from like stadium shows to four drunk guys in my living room.
Yeah.
But, you know, I ran the casino. I ran a 1,400-seat venue in Providence where David Bowie played and B.B. King and the Violent Femmes and... Peter Frampton, you know, I got to hang out with Bowie for an afternoon. How cool was that?
I can't imagine.
I almost yelled at him.
Why?
Because I was out. I was drinking at the time heavily. Maybe the night before I was heavily. And I showed up the next morning and everybody was there working. And it was the band had showed up early and my crew was late. And I go into my office and everything's just kind of a mess. It's chaos. And I go in my office and somebody's sitting on my couch and he's on the phone. And I walk in and I startle him and he stood up and kicked over his coffee on my floor. And I'm like, oh, damn it. And he looks up and he goes, hello, I'm David. It was Bowie in my office. Yeah. I'm like, what the heck?
I know. That's
so I got
crazy
to hang with him and his wife through the course of the day. It was great. You know?
You've had a million like pinch me moments.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've been in the right place at the right time. It's nothing I did, but it was the right place.
Peter Wolf.
Yeah, New Year's Eve in New York City was on a rooftop deck. We were 150 feet from the ball drop. Like, there's nobody between us. Like, there's just a road there. It's all blocked off. And, you know, women are asking Peter Wolf and the Jay Giles Band, a legendary band, to play, like, you know, cover songs or something. It was weird. It was just a weird night, but it was so much fun.
I'd have thrown him off the roof.
Freebird.
Yeah. I'd have thrown him off the friggin'
Free
roof.
Freebird. Listen, we'll play Freebird, and we're going to also see if you can fly.
Yeah,
yes.
See ya. B.B. King.
B.B. King also fell asleep on my couch in Providence.
Did you take cash?
Take that as a compliment.
Did you have to pay him in cash?
No, not like Wilson Pickett we did one time at the casino.
Yeah.
But B.B. King actually, we had here in Manchester.
Yeah.
So we were supposed to the show was supposed to happen in August, and the people who were in charge of the things down there decided to build their own stage, and it didn't work. And B.B. King and his crew showed up, and there were 7 buses. There were all these different acts. They show up, and they can't perform because there's no roof on the stage. So I convinced them to stay. In fact, the weather report was good. They would stay the show and do the show. And so I called MUR, and I got the weather report. And it was going to rain all night long. So the buses all packed up and left. I stood in that park all night long, not a drop of rain.
Yeah.
We rescheduled the show for a month later. That show was worth $180,000.
Yeah.
They rescheduled it for a month later, and that was another $60,000. It happened to be on 9/11.
Yeah. I was going to say.
Yeah. And so it was one of the very few concerts that actually happened on 9/11.
Yeah.
And because the promoter wouldn't cancel it because he already lost $180,000, and the agent was just a scumbag, so he didn't want to cancel it because he was making his commission.
Right.
So we did the show.
Yeah. And I remember hearing about that, that it was cathartic. Like, it was exactly what people...
No, that wasn't cathartic. What was cathartic was when you brought, when Godsmack came and you guys were there for that.
Okay. But it was, but I had talked to somebody who was at the B.B. King show saying that on that day,
yeah,
that was what they needed, was to be in a place. And I know that not a lot of people are not going to agree, but I thought it was an interesting point of view that they went there and they went there and just listened to music for 2 hours.
That's really cool to hear, because I didn't feel that there that night. What I felt was angry people. I felt like the crowd was angry. Not all the people showed up, and people were just miserable, and it was just an awful feeling.
Were people mad that the show happened?
Some people were mad that it happened, yes.
Yeah.
Some people were mad just because what had happened that day.
Yeah. Right,
and
sure.
We still really didn't have answers at that point.
We were all terrified.
Yeah, we didn't know. And like, for days, there were no planes flying around. So it was a weird, weird thing.
The Godsmack show happened a while after, shortly after.
Month, three weeks maybe.
We didn't know the show was going to happen, and that was a really special experience. You know, when they're in their rehearsal studio, that's one of the pictures they have hanging.
Is it really?
Is that show and the flag and the band. Sully cried on stage.
It was his idea.
Yeah.
We went out and...
found the biggest flag on the planet.
Two of the biggest flags. And they also found 10,000 candles.
Yeah.
They went down to... I don't know if it was Yankee Candle or some other candle factory, but they found these handheld candles and they passed them out.
Yeah.
And everybody lit them at a certain time.
Yeah.
And then they rolled the flags down and it was like... I don't think it was a dry eye in the house.
I was in the tower.
Yeah.
The soundboard, right? You were there. It was unbelievable. I forget that you were like you worked the stage when Scotty played with Slipknot.
Yes. Yeah.
He called me to tell me that we went from having a 25-minute set to about a 15.
Yeah. Because, I don't think that was my call.
Well, no. But you made the call to me to tell me because a band that Sharon was all of a sudden managing decided they were going to play on the Offfest and they were going to go on after us. So Jim called and said, "Hey, don't hate me." And I'm like, we were already, the van was
packed. He says that to me every morning.
The van was packed, and I was just like, it is what it is. We'll take 15 minutes then.
Yeah, but he's really good at that. Like, we've been friends for 30 years. He takes care of my life, but he's so good at crisis management. And when, even the perfect show, they never go off without something going wrong.
Yeah.
And he's the calm, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm in the corner going, "Rochi, I'm going to kill this. Go get a sandwich. Go get a sandwich. I got it. I'll take care of it." Yeah. And that's just me.
Yeah.
And I've seen him do it with bands. I've seen him do it at the Buzz Ball. He's managing 30 different acts.
Yeah.
So what are some of the craziest demands you've
really
had
good at
from an artist?
Can we just talk about this for a second?
Chef Boyardee
with
ravioli.
With Jimmy, I had business cards made to give him that said, "Just call Roach."
Yeah, right.
Because
right.
I'm trying to keep him out of trouble.
Right. Go ahead, Kelly.
What were some of the toughest things that some of the artists have asked you to do, or craziest things?
The only real... Can I talk about a jerk?
Sure.
So we had Hall & Oates.
Kidding me? That's what people love.
Oh,
Hall & Oates.
Hall & Oates at the casino.
It
wasn't
like
Daryl Hall.
My money's on a big... Oh,
no,
oh,
it wasn't.
Oates?
It was Oates.
God, a little guy was good to me.
He was. I don't know. He had a bad day.
I liked him.
I liked the cute little one.
He was good. No,
yeah, I liked him.
He came out and goes, "Hey, you were really funny." The other guy couldn't be bothered. The big guy, but the little guy liked me.
Yeah.
Did you open that show that night?
No, Jimmy, this was down the Cape.
Jimmy judges everything by who liked him.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. So what happened?
No, he was just, he showed up and he was in a miserable mood and he wanted a masseuse and we couldn't find somebody that was available. And then he yelled out, "Get me a hooker." I don't think he meant that, but that's what he yelled out.
Right.
And then he really wanted some really nice bottles of wine. So we went out and bought him some real nice wines and he sent that back. He was just kind of a jerk. But you know, over the years, but the fun, one of my favorite was from Singer Park. Was when we had Poison. Who else was on the show? Quiet Riot was on the show.
Yeah.
But Warrant was on the show. And in the contract for Poison, it said Warrant was only allowed in the area 15 minutes before their set, and they had to leave 15 minutes afterwards. Apparently, there was some sort of riff going on.
Yeah.
But that was pretty interesting.
Bret Michaels is not easy. Bret Michaels, it's the good, easy going. That's his persona. But behind the scenes,
I can't stand him.
Every rose has its thorn.
Well, there was a problem that night where at one point in the show, they were going to allow people to come on stage. So we had arranged for it, and we had told all our security guards to help people get on the stage.
Yeah.
And at the last minute, the road manager canceled it, but he didn't tell the guys in the band.
Yeah.
So we told all security, nobody on stage, nobody on stage, and the band called them. So my security guys didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
And there was problems for a few minutes, and the road manager came over and said, let him go. So look, it didn't go well for a while.
And when I say that about Bret Michaels, that's full acknowledgement that, you know, sometimes you have to be, because working with different road managers and places and venues can be really tough.
Absolutely.
You know, But you were, that was the show, the Slipknot show was where we got in all that trouble.
Yeah.
Right? That we did a show at Singer Park with Slipknot, and who else was on the bill? Was Disturbed
on
the bill?
You had Slipknot, you had Disturbed, you had Linkin Park.
Yeah.
In the beginning, before they were like really monsters. Yes. Yeah, it was a big show. And Slipknot, F-bombs, every other thing. Now, that's a neighborhood where Singer Park used to be.
Yep.
And so the next day, neighbors were up in arms. It was the front page. The union leader roasted us over
that.
The friggin' coals because that's what they did. That's what sold them newspapers. And, you know, and we were in the crosshairs. Yeah. Rock 101 was in the crosshairs.
Because someone said a billboard or something?
You guys weren't the problem.
Yeah, I know. I know that. Because our boss loved the press.
Right.
And I'm like, he's like, you need to come out against this, and you need to go tell them to shove it up their ass and all that. I'm like, you don't understand how it works in New England.
Yeah.
Because if you do that, there's no more shows here.
Yeah. You're done.
Yeah.
Everybody will turn on you, and Rock 101 will never get another foot anywhere if you go up against the city. What you got to do is just go, sorry, it won't happen again.
Yeah.
And you just move forward. He wouldn't do it. He was so angry with me because we wouldn't do that and fuel the fire that he wanted.
Yeah.
Because you know what? Everybody who thinks like that, bad headlines are good, they're gone.
Yeah.
They don't last because they don't care.
Right.
They're only in it for the quick pop, and they don't give a shit about what's going to happen and your reputation that's on the line. Because we were the face of the station, period.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to risk what we put and built together for a headline.
Right.
And he hated me for it.
Yeah.
Hated me for it.
Look who's still here.
Huh?
Look who's still here.
Whatever.
Yeah. He didn't understand you built a community here.
Yeah.
And you have to live in that community.
Right.
And all he had to say was, you know, it was a mistake. We won't let it happen again.
That's it.
It would have gone away.
Yeah. And you could have more shows.
Yeah.
You know?
But with Slipknot that night, I didn't know really much about the band. And they had the 666 signs on side. And they had the moving risers and the masks and stuff. And on stage, they're wild. And then backstage.
Coolest could be.
They're all Midwestern kids drinking beer trying to pick up chicks.
Yeah.
I'm like, they were the coolest guys in the world.
Yeah. That's what people
it's
don't
all
know.
A show, man.
But you've done all those shows. We've worked together. Matter of fact, it was a singer show where we met.
Yeah.
And I had to bring on a band. I can't remember who it was. And he goes, hey. You know, he's like, he's trying to give me he's giving me instructions. I'm like, dude, it ain't about me. It's good. I'm just going to get up there. I'm going to get off. Yeah. No problem. So I go up and I do my thing quick, less than a minute and a half.
Yeah.
You know, not for me, but for who's coming up. Because my job is to pump up who's coming up.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm not there to entertain.
He's the pump up guy.
I'm the pump up guy.
They call him the fluffer.
That's what I do. Yeah. I'm a
he's
fluffer.
The pump up guy.
I'm a fluffer nut is what I am. So I come over and he looks at me and goes, I'll never forget. He goes, dude, I wish everybody was like you.
Because
there were people that we worked with that went up and thought, here's my chance to do a comedy.
10 minutes, start doing jokes, whole nonsense. And then they go, hey, all right, you ready for Mario Speedwagon?
Yeah,
yes, we are. First, please welcome a very funny comedian. Screw you.
Yeah. So, but it was just, that's where we met. And we kind of said, I said, I'm not one of those guys. And then we kind of bonded. And then, so that was, that's how Jim and I met. We've worked together a million gazillion times since then. So
he's one of the good guys in the business.
Crazy.
He's a good guy.
He's a good guy.
So, all right. So we went with who you didn't like, Hall & Oates or just Oates.
Just the little guy.
I'm not really pleased with Oates, to be honest with you, anyway.
Yeah.
Right now. I was on Team Oates, and the whole breakup kind of pissed me off. He recorded a song that he wrote with Adam.
That's right.
And then he re-released it on his whole album, on his new album.
Without Adam?
Without Adam.
Oh, that's cold.
Oh.
And it's not as good.
That's the little guy?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Just put him on my list.
I love it.
No, but I mean, look, obviously.
Put him on my list.
He can't open for Jimmy Dunn now.
It's just the song isn't as good as a solo as it is as a duet.
Right.
It's a great duet that they did, but anyway.
It's a rotten thing to do to Adam,
too. So right now he's on my list. He made my list. You know what I mean? So, again.
I don't, you know, they're making it out like it's a big... look, Hall & Oates, everybody knows Hall & Oates. Everyone's heard the music. You don't exactly go crazy. You don't hear it at a football game before they're going to kick off.
No, you don't.
You hear it when you're buying groceries. Okay.
Okay.
It's not the end of the world that they broke up.
No, but when you go see them and they're rolling out hit after hit
I'm not sad. They
were the most popular. Yeah. They were the biggest selling duo, right? In history.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Whack it up 50-50 and go your separate ways. I don't need the drama.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
100%. I'm not. Nobody's sitting there going, can't 100%. Wait for the new Hall & Oates to come out.
100%. What are some of the people, Jim, and then we'll wrap up because you guys got to go. What are some of the people, like, I know, like guys like B.B. King, Don Rickles. Give me some of the people that you worked with that have, like, left an indelible stamp on you.
The Rickles story was, you know, and you were there for that night, so that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Rickles had played the Palace a number of years ago, and when he showed up at the building, his road manager was Frank Sinatra's road manager for a number of years. As a matter of fact, he just put a new book out, this guy Tony Appenasano, about the late years with Frank and helping him out as he transitioned. But he's telling me stories.
What do you mean by transition?
When Frank died.
Oh, right, okay.
You know, not into a woman.
Right, I wasn't sure.
I'm sorry. That term is different now.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, I got to keep up with the times.
Go ahead.
He had this pinky ring on and he goes, see this ring? Frank gave me this ring. Yeah. He's telling me Sinatra stories all day long.
Yeah.
And then the time is coming for Mr. Rickles is supposed to show up. And we're out in the alleyway waiting for him to show up. And the Escalade pulls up. And I hear, Jim. And I look over and I think it's Tony yelling, wanting something. So I walk over and he goes, and I look at Tony, what is it? He goes, nope. He shakes his head. He points to the Escalade where the passenger side door is open. And I run over there, and it's Mr. Rickles sitting in the car, and he's dressed in this really nice bathrobe. He's got a tuxedo shirt and a bow tie on. And he's got these fancy slippers on. And I don't think he's wearing pants at the time, which is a Sinatra thing, I guess.
Right.
And I go, I said, yes, Mr. Rickles, what can I do for you? He goes, you run this place? I said, well, I booked the show and I'm running it tonight. He goes, it's a dump. And he slams the door in my face. and then he comes out and he hangs out. And he was picking on a few people at the place. And I had a window of time. And he was sitting at the side of the stage and the show was about to start. And I knew I had this window. And I asked him, I said, can I bring somebody up to say hi? And he said, sure. And I run down, I grab you.
Yeah.
Not Andy.
Andy hated me for years for this. And I just grabbed Greg, and I didn't realize Andy was with you. And I grabbed him on stage, and I brought you up, and you got a picture with him.
Oh, it's the best.
And Andy, I didn't know Andy was there.
Andy had a date.
Oh, okay.
So he was like, I just got embarrassed, you know. But the fact is I was a bigger fan.
Yeah,
I was the one who had expressed, I'm a fan.
Right.
And we had talked about it. So,
yeah.
And then, so he came up, you took the picture and stuff, and it was a great night. Afterwards, he and my wife and I met him for a picture, and then he said, you're coming to dinner with me. And I'm like, okay. So we go over to the Radisson, or whatever it was at the time, and there's a restaurant there. And it was myself, my wife, Tony, his road manager, his musical director, and I forget his name, and Mr. Rickles. And we sat there for an hour, and he just told stories. He was the sweetest man in the world.
He is the kindest and the softest.
So cool.
Like shaking his hand was a big thing for me.
That's cool, though. Imagine having dinner with him.
It was awesome. And then he invited my wife out to California with him.
Mm-hmm.
Did not invite me.
Yeah.
Apparently, he liked the tall blonde. Mm-hmm. But that was just one. There were nights like that over the years where they just kind of happen.
Yeah.
And if you try to make them happen, they don't. But if you're there doing your job, sometimes they happen.
Yeah. And, you know, you worked with someone like Roadkill on stage.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Turn his mic on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ.
Is it going to be working this year for him?
Yes, it will be.
Scotty, at some point, we got to shut down every mic except his.
Scotty's stifling laughter because he had mic issues last year. And
no, it was two years ago.
Feels like every
time,
year.
But it wasn't just once.
Yeah,
it was every time he grabbed the mic, something didn't work.
Yeah,
it was
like,
he handled it like a pro, though.
I don't know about that.
Well, I handled on like stage, he did.
Yeah, he did. He
on
did.
Stage, he did.
He did. It was kind of funny. But
it's tough to do that, to shut your mic off every time.
Yeah, that's a message.
very.
That is.
I'm starting really, to get it.
Especially when you're like switching them out and stuff, yeah, and then he's still killing it.
Yeah.
That's from years of experience.
All right. Well, that's all we have time for because these guys got to go. They got a very important breakfast appointment. But good to talk. I love talking about this stuff. That I think people find it really interesting, and we love working with you. You do a great job at Buzzball. Tickets are on sale now. You can go to the Capital Center website. It's December 19th. Presented by our friends at Granite State Credit Union. It's your kitchen and bath. CCANH.com. Don't wait, because I know it's a ways off, but every year people are like, oh, I didn't know. Don't wait, because they will go and it will sell out. So,
and while we're talking about his production talent, let me give you a few other shows that he's producing.
yeah.
Jimmy Dunn at the
Epping Theater.
At the Epping Theater. Jimmy Dunn at the Jimmy Dunn's Theater. Comedy All Stars, which is up in Laconia.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that one. And then what's the other one over in
Rockport?
Rockport. Yeah. We'll be in Nashua.
Well, that's the other one.
Yeah, there's a few others.
Yeah,
so,
he's
I mean,
good.
He's really good. But
he's good.
He's a good guy.
He does his best work when he just has to turn on that microphone.
That's it. That's it.
Turn it on. I got the rest of it, man.
Light the stage. Let's go.
What's it like?
Jimmy, good to see you.
Jim, good
to see you as always. We will see you tomorrow. Thanks for hanging with us on the Buzz 24/7.